Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, Zorba, some topics to talk over?
Yes, emergency rooms built for the elderly. I guess you could call them baby boomer ERs. And they are a long time coming. We have a lot of emergency rooms in the country for children only. What about catering to the elderly? Maybe good for them, and it may be good for the hospital.
Okay.
And then teen eating disorders, more common than you think. Something that's a problem that we should grapple with so that we can recognize it's some important new information.
And our recipe.
Minty fruit kebabs, a great springtime recipe. And as you know, spring is on the way. Spring is here. It's on the way. We're getting warmer. Great recipe for this time of year.
Again, our number is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. To the phones we go, Zorba, and a listener in Denver, Colorado. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I had a question. Somebody who is newly pregnant, also who has suffered from pretty extreme seasonal allergies, I wondered what is the best treatment for somebody who would like to keep a pretty natural pregnancy. I don't want to take too many drugs.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little about those extreme allergies.
Oh, it's seasonal allergies, a lot of nasal congestion, sneezing, and then I'm prone to sinus infections afterward if I don't handle it correctly.
Mm-hmm. And so you've had allergies, I take it, for mm-hmm. a long time. This is your first pregnancy, second pregnancy?
First.
Well, congratulations, mm-hmm. first of all. That's always
Thank
in order.
You.
What do you normally take for your allergies?
My favorite is Zyrtec.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've taken Claritin, but it makes me a little loopy. Zyrtec seems to do the trick.
And have you ever used nasal sprays, not the over-the-counter, but prescription nasal sprays at all?
No, I've used Flonase in the past,
okay.
and it works okay, but actually I haven't found much difference from using that versus a neti pod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My neti pot works great.
Uh-huh. And neti pots are really good for sinuses, and they're really good to clear the mucus in the back of the nose. You know, one of the issues with allergies is our nose becomes stuffy, our eyes will often itch. If you can do it in the most natural way, it really would be getting rid of the mucus with a saline solution with a neti pot. Whenever you buy them, they always come with these little packets mm-hmm. of saline solution. And we've got a dynamite recipe, by the way, so you can save money without those packets. If you come to our website, zorbapastor.org, or to our Facebook page, we'll link that up so that you can get that neti pot recipe. But for many people, they need more than that. They really need to have something because, you know, allergies are awful. I mean, I used to have them when I was younger, and it was, you know, I couldn't stop sneezing. And for those people where neti pot doesn't work, you know, antihistamines really work, but the nasal sprays, and there are about six of them, steroid nasal sprays on the market. The nasal sprays really work well if you use them as directed, and that's sort of maximizing the dose. And frankly, that's going to probably have the least disruption for your pregnancy.
Okay.
You know, antihistamines.
Is there
are
one
also,
you would recommend?
Well, you know, you started with, as you said, you started with Flonase. Flonase happens to be generic fluticasone. Nasonex is another one that's on the market. Becanase is another spray. Basically, they're all pretty similar in that they're steroid sprays. There's no one that is better than the other. But they're individual differences, just like I tell people, some people buy a Ford or a Chevy or a Toyota Camry or Lexus, that, you know, a certain car makes them feel better is good for them. Try one spray. If that doesn't work, try the next spray. But generally, I go with what is the cheapest and what is the lowest tier from the insurance
plan. Is there anything she should stay away from because of the pregnancy?
Don't go outside. Stay inside for the rest of the pregnancy. Don't go outside. Shut your doors and turn on the air conditioning. That's what I would recommend. You might as well close the window so you can't see that it's really nice outside. No, that's about it.
But seriously, folks.
You could stay away from flowers, but that's what's so fun. We love flowers.
Yeah. Not as far
spray.
As medications are concerned.
Well, antihistamines are okay in nasal sprays. Okay. I mean, they're okay. By the way, just to let you know, there's a categorization A, B, C. see X, there's certain categorizations for pregnancy, whether it's been tested or it hasn't been tested. You can always ask your pharmacist. They love answering questions, and they can look at the pregnancy class, which basically will tell you what the data is on it. And antihistamines are safe, and so are steroid nasal sprays.
Okay, thank you.
So I've got one question for you. You have names picked out for the baby yet?
Yes.
Okay, can we hear them?
Yes, it's way too early. I'm only 7 weeks along.
Only 7 weeks along. Well, be careful. Yeah. Once you tell those names to the grandparents, they immediately begin to use that name for the baby. So keep it to yourself. Keep it to your self, and then tell them when the baby finally comes out. Tom is smiling and laughing.
Well, they not only maybe start calling the baby by those names, but they'll argue with you about the names.
Well, actually, right, they will.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Take care.
Have
a great pregnancy.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, I appreciate the call. Thank you. 1-800-462-7413, toll free. On we go to Yuma, Arizona now. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, what's up?
Oh, not much. I have a question. I'm a truck driver, and I'm on the road all the time, cross country, up into Canada, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, as a truck driver, you know, we have different times we can eat, different times we sleep. It's not like normal people.
Right.
How is the best way to try to stay healthy out here without gaining weight or trying to, what's the best thing to do? I try to eat a lot in my truck. I've got a George Foreman grill and stuff like that, and I try to eat a lot of chicken and everything. But the truck stops are not the best place to eat.
Right.
Really? I'm shocked. I always thought truck stops had totally healthy food. In fact, they're known for their healthful servings.
Right.
Fatty meat, potatoes, gravy, canned peas.
Right. And it's all not fit good and stuff. So I'm just kind of curious, what can basically a truck driver do with all the new laws we got going on? They're coming up with sleep acne now. They're coming up, with you pull into a scale and DOT officer thinks you look a little overweight, they tape your neck and go, if you're over 17 inches on your neck, they're sending you off for a sleep acne test.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a second.
That totally lost me, yeah.
Yeah, what happens? They put a tape around your neck, and if your neck
they measure neck, and if you're 17 inches or more, they have to send you off for a sleep acne test because they think you're obese.
Oh, my goodness.
You're making that up, right?
No, that is about as intrusive. So, in other words, so they tape your neck, and if you're too heavy, then you have to go and get a sleep apnea test. They're very expensive tests. As they send you up. Do they give you a card and recommend the place you go so they get a kickback?
I don't know. I haven't been taped yet.
how many?
But I have actually seen it. I've walked in and caught him taping a driver
and everything.
And then I left. I'm getting out of there.
That is a little intrusive, and these are people who are not trained medically to make evaluations.
No,
they're not trained medically. So let's get back to the issue at hand, which is how you eat in a difficult situation. Now, so first of all, you're right. You go to a truck stop. You want to have, some healthy, nutritious food, and you want it to be hot. So what you want to do is look at the truck stop and say, what can I eat, first of all, that is actually okay? And on the whole, if you look at a plain burger, we're talking about a burger that's made, it's going to be less than meatloaf, which is made with gravy and mashed potatoes. The gravy is what will kill you. I mean, the mashed potatoes are not the best in the world, but the gravy is what's going to kill you. So what you actually want to do is go in there, because sometimes you want a hot meal. If you look at your calories and you keep track of them, and there's an excellent website for that, by the way, called loseit.com, L-O-S-E, loseit.com, which is an excellent website. If you keep track of your calories, you can begin to find out where they are. And it's very interesting because there are a lot of things that have calories that you don't know about. I had one person came in the office and she said, well, I have 10 sticks of this gum every day. And I thought, well, gum doesn't have very much. And I looked it up. She was having 220 calories of gum. Mm. Well, if she went to sugarless gum, she'd get rid of 220 calories over a one-year period. That's 10 pounds of weight. Mm. That's roughly 5 to 10 pounds of weight. So You're ordering the right things. You also, at any truck stop, you can go to the manager and say, look, everything on this menu is really high caloric. You ought to have some other low caloric choices. And you know what? They'll listen to you. I mean, if they have enough people who say, hey, we ought to have boneless, skinless chicken breast on the grill, teriyaki chicken, they'll start to have that there. But you've got the right idea. You want to keep track of what you're eating, but you want to get rid of 250 to 300 calories. And to do that, you got to look at where those calories are coming from.
Okay.
Yeah, because you don't want your neck.
Well, I appreciate it.
And because you don't want your neck taped, right?
Yeah. What's your neck size?
Well, I've got a thick neck and everything, but it's still small, but I'm only 5'6".
Uh-huh.
But it's like, I seen all this going on, and I see these new laws, and I'm seeing everything happen.
Right,
and I'm
right.
No.
You bet. You want to act on that right away. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling, and thanks for listening.
Yep. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. So, Zorba, tell us about emergency rooms for geezers.
Well, emergency room for boomers. Boomers, geezers. I think geezers, you know, I think of people without teeth as being geezers. Boomers, man. Boomers are
okay.
Baby. It won't be baby boomers. It'll be elderly boomers. Elderly old baby boomers. I'm not going to try to say that. I'll say it completely wrong. But we've had emergency rooms for kids for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're in children's hospitals. And often the emergency room for children in a large hospital will be a different ER because they often separate people out. But we've never thought about an emergency room for elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've all gone into the emergency room. Think about it. There's a rush. You know, there's always hustle and bustle. There's usually somebody sitting in the emergency room who's covering their head bleeding.
Oh, it's a really awful experience for everybody there.
You know, yeah. For that, they're bleeding or they're in pain and they're harshly lights and their white walls and their bright floors. And I mean, it's not a place that is conducive to grandma who may come in and have problems,
right.
Especially if grandma is often living alone. It's really a bad place. And so the concept is that is being developed in a number of hospitals is our emergency rooms for seniors. And basically they have thicker beds. The bed mattresses are thicker so they can protect you. The floor is a non-skid floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of a floor. They have different sorts of alarms. They have alarms on patients in case they start to wander to keep them from going up. The room lighting is softer. The clocks are larger. There's less noise. Each room is furnished with a walker, so they don't have to look for a walker if that's. Patients can request, reading glasses and even hearing devices, and they can be a major difference. And the few hospitals that have started this have been very, very successful. And it may be the time for people to look at their community hospital and say, what about a separate section for the elderly?
But one of our big concerns in this country right now is the cost of health care. To me, this seems like it's not exactly helping out with bringing down the cost of health care when we're talking about expanding emergency rooms.
Well, first of all, you're using the word expanding, and that's kind of interesting.
You have one emergency room for everybody else, and then you have to put another emergency room.
Well, you might have a section of that emergency room, and that's where the seniors go into. In other words, if you've got a typical hospital emergency room, it's of a certain size. And right now, the kids are often separated out, certainly in big emergency rooms. All you have to do is separate out the seniors and make one part of that emergency room for senior citizens, and you change the lighting. So it's not expanding more as it is, if you will, redecorating. And it also may be more efficient. You know, one of the things that happens is people get upset, they get anxious, and especially seniors, often they're in the hospital. You look at how much of our medical cost goes to senior citizens being hospitalized. It's either a quarter of a third of all Medicare expenses come during hospitalization in the last 6 months of life. If you've got an ER that's better, the senior might go into that ER and might end up going home because they function better. So it might actually save money.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener, joins now in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Oh, well, I was calling about my trigger thumb, and I had it last year on my left hand, and this year I've got it on my right hand, so I guess it's making the rounds. And last year I had it fixed with surgery. And then a friend of mine who's a Botox rep said that I could try doing prolotherapy And I've never heard of it before, and I heard it's sort of like a sugar injection, and I was wondering if you recommend that, if you knew anything about it and what you had to say.
Prolotherapy. Before Zorba helps you out, I'm probably the only one in the world that doesn't know exactly what is trigger thumb and what are the symptoms.
Oh, it's kind of like a clicking in my thumb, and it gets really, really stiff. And it gets worse and worse until a point that I kind of can't move it. So I've read that, I'm not sure if this is true, that it's only it's mostly with women. I don't know if that's true, but similar to like carpal tunnel.
Well, so. What happens with trigger finger or trigger thumb is that you have an inflammation of the tendon, and the tendon goes through, it's almost like pulleys, because we're using our hands, and it's really our forearm muscles that are causing our grip with our hands. And when you've got swelling and they go over horizontal tendons that are keeping all the tendons in place, it can make a clicking sound, and you may need extra pressure to kind of open it up.
Yeah, they shouldn't call it trigger thumb. You can't pull the trigger with your thumb while you're holding the gun. That doesn't...
You know, Tom.
I think that's a great point. I will bring it up to whoever named it trigger thumb or trigger finger that they shouldn't do that. We've got to change it. I don't know what we're going to change it to, but you know, you'll come up with an idea.
Yeah, I've had no experience with that trigger thing.
There you go. Now, wait, what happened to the one that last year? I mean, you had it on one side. I don't remember which side, but...
I had it on my left hand, and I did surgery for it, and they fixed it great. I mean, originally they gave me injections.
Steroid, right? Injections of steroid?
Right. And the first time it worked, second time not so good. By the third time came around, they said, well, we need to give you some quick surgery. And it was great. And I sort of would prefer not to go for surgery if I can go for an injection.
Right. By the way, for some people, steroid injections work really, really well. I can give you a perfect example, and that's the example of me. I have trigger finger on my left middle finger. Because I don't shoot a gun, I didn't realize that it was even a misnomer. It's my left middle finger bothers me in the middle of the night sometimes. And I get an injection once every 2 years, and the symptoms go away roughly. I've had two or three injections. Problems with steroid injections is sometimes it can cause atrophy or the shrinkage of the tendon, and you can't have too many of them. Prolotherapy is a different sort of an injection, not covered generally by insurance. Some plans do, but generally not covered by insurance. It's a sugar-type alcohol solution. And what it actually does is it causes the same thing, not exactly the same, but it does a reduction of inflammation around where that inflamed tendon is. And for some people, it can be very effective, but once again, you're injecting something into the area. And I know prolotherapy is used for the back, very useful in the back. It's used for the leg for chronic pain. I've never heard of it in the hand or the thumb.
Okay.
So
is it permanent?
Well, it's not. It's just like a steroid injection. It's really not permanent. And so it has to be repeated. And frankly, I've heard of it in the back for around the sacroiliac joint and in some of the facet joints in the back for pain. I think I would stay away from it for the thumb. I would be concerned. I wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. But I would do a steroid injection to see if one steroid injection might get rid of it. Sometimes one steroid injection gets rid of it and doesn't come back.
Yeah,
and
that'd
so
be worse.
I would do that. I wouldn't do the other.
All right. I'll keep that in mind. Thank you guys so much. It is so cool to talk to you. I'm really very exciting.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate the call. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Everybody always says how cool we are. And before we step out for a short break, it's time to lay down the gauntlet of another fast-paced edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Nathan leads us off, writing, I'm in my early 20s and I have stretch marks in many places on my body. Is there anything I can do to get rid of them other than expensive surgery?
We don't have a cure, and I don't think the surgery really works. We don't know why guys get stretch marks, except when they get heavier and they get thinner, they happen. Women, of course, get it with pregnancy. Good luck. Put on that T-shirt.
Next up is George, who's a big cashew fan. He asks, I love to eat raw cashew nuts. I average 60 to 70 pieces daily. Will this cause any issue with my health?
Not at all. Cashews are great, but it might cause an issue with your wallet because cashews are expensive.
John heard your recommendations for a home BP monitor. He wants to know if it's best to measure on the wrist or the arm.
The wrist is worthless. Do not buy a wrist blood pressure monitor. They don't work. You need one on your arm, and make sure you spend at least $50. And if you want to buy a good one, buy a good one.
William writes to us asking, when preparing salmon to maximize for oil content, do you leave skin on or off?
All depends on your taste.
Alfonso or Alfonso's iPhone would like to know, how do you measure antioxidants? Is there a minimum max intake?
Well, there's no minimum intake. There's no maximum intake. What you have to do is actually look it up, try to see whether or not it's actually been analyzed, and then maximize that food. But in fact, you should enjoy the food that antioxidants contain.
Finally, Michael from Door County, Wisconsin, shares this humorous haiku about hospital attire. Minor accident, insurance, hospital gown only covers half.
That's a great haiku.
We've worn out Zorba during this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
A recipe is coming up. You'll want to stick around for that. More of your questions, of course. More research on our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before we take our next call, recipe time, Zorba, and a good dessert.
Many of us gain a little kind of winter fat during the wintertime. I mean, you don't have any trouble with your weight. I tend not to have
much of it.
You don't
either.
No, but I tend to put on a couple pounds during the winter and take it off during the summer. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, we're exercising more. We're out. We're doing more things in the spring. But also, in the wintertime, we just tend to eat more high-caloric foods. And so one of the things you want to look at is sort of an alternative dessert for spring. What can you do that doesn't have the same calories, doesn't have the same fat that would be useful? I mean, I happen to like dessert. Sometimes it's my favorite meal, but when you look at cakes, they cost more caloric-wise than when you look at fruit. On the other hand, just having a piece of fruit doesn't always excite me.
Right.
You know, it doesn't always excite me. So that's where minty fruit kebabs come in. This is something you could serve to companies, something you could have easy. Easy to fix, easy to do. Sometimes I think easy recipes are wonderful, and it's tasty. And it's good to think of this time of year.
Okay.
This time of year. So we're going to start out with a half cup of plain yogurt.
Half a cup of plain yogurt.
Right. So there are a few things you can do. First of all, you could use Greek-style yogurt. Greek-style yogurt has a sort of a more sour taste to it. Mm-hmm. It's not quite sour cream, but it has more body to it. If you decide you don't want to use plain yogurt, if you get something such as vanilla yogurt, it's going to add a few calories to it, but once again, it's going to add that taste to it. In this part of the recipe, we're going to use plain yogurt, but frankly, any yogurt that you like that's blended is going to be good for this. A teaspoon of sugar.
A little tea sugar.
Right. Now, an alternative that would be, instead of a teaspoon of sugar, would be to do a tablespoonful of honey. And honey is great. Sugar, of course, is sweet. Honey is really just as sweet, but it adds that nice honey flavor to it. Again, something you may alter in the house.
Yeah.
1/8 teaspoon of vanilla extract.
An eighth of a little tea vanilla extract?
That's right, vanilla extract. So, and you've got that in your house, and that's in your cooking cabinet, right? You always have vanilla extract.
I think we probably
I bet you do. And the real question is, how many years? Five, yeah, six, seven, eight.
All right.
But vanilla extract tends to kind of stay, so that's okay.
Okay.
A tablespoonful of fresh mint leaves that are sliced.
a big tea, fresh mint leaves that are sliced.
That's right. So where do you buy your mint when you're looking for mint?
At the mint store.
At the mint store. At the mint. I buy my mint at the mint. No. But if you tend to go to either Hispanic grocery stores or Asian grocery stores, the mint is much cheaper. I have no idea why, but I buy my mint at ethnic grocery stores, and it's cheap. It's very inexpensive. And, in fact, I buy my basil there, my fresh thyme there, and it's about a quarter of the price that it is in a mainland grocery store. Half a pineapple cubed, or the equivalent in cans.
Half a pineapple cubed. Mm-hmm.
Two kiwis peeled and sliced.
Two kiwis peeled and sliced.
Right. If you don't want to peel them, you don't have to. I mean, I don't particularly care. But a pint of strawberries hulled.
A pint of strawberries hulled.
Where do you think that word came from, hulled? Because it has a hull in it, right?
Yeah,
so
guess,
hull means
guess,
you take out the hull. Why don't we call it a pit? Because it's not
know.
A pit. It's a hull. I bet the grammar police will tell us the difference between a hull and a pit. What is the difference between a hull and a pit?
Why do we want to bother hulling?
Well, because it's got that little green stuff in it. That's what the hull is.
Well,
it doesn't taste
is that just taking the top off?
You're hulling it.
Oh, okay.
Hulling
right.
it. It's a hull of a thing to do, but you're hulling it. I'm sorry. I couldn't help with that. Thank you. Half a honeydew melon cubed, and you could use cantaloupe if you want to.
Half a honeydew melon cubed.
That's right. So whisk together the yogurt, sugar, or honey, if you're going to use that, vanilla and mint, and then chill until it's ready to serve. The mint, by the way, is going to blend its flavors into the yogurt. Then thread the fruit onto a wooden skewer alternating pineapple, kiwi, strawberries, and melon, and repeat until the skewer is full. And then serve the kebab with a large dollop of the mint sauce. So you could put the kebabs in the middle of the table, and you could put little bits of mint sauce in front of everyone, or you could do it the way we do it in our house, which is we put the kebabs on the table, and then we put the mint sauce in a bowl on the table. We all kind of dig in family style.
Do you have to put them on in that order that you gave?
The order is very important. That's exactly right. The order is critical, right? Remember, it's pineapple, kiwi, strawberries, and melon.
Okay.
If
no
you do pineapple, melon, kiwi,
that would ruin it.
Doesn't work. It would ruin it. Well, pineapple likes to be next to kiwi. They fight if they're in the wrong order. They fight. Okay. Of course, the order is important. Really, you're questioning me? I'm a doctor.
I'm, really, trust me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Please, it's okay. It's okay. I forgive you this one time.
Yeah.
Calories. Low in calories. 55 calories. Per skewer. That's basically if you have a small skewer, not a big skewer at all. And in terms of it, it's got a bit of dietary fiber, obviously not much protein. But I think one of the advantages of a recipe like this is that it's a low-fat, low-carb, low-calorie recipe that is springy and spring-like.
So what do you dip these things into the yogurt?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'd like to do is do away with the stick.
Yeah, do away with the stick.
And just put the stuff in a bowl.
Uh-huh, just put that. Well, you could do that. You could do that. It wouldn't look as pretty, but you could do it. But you've never been into style when
kebab.
It comes to serving.
I'm not a kebab person.
You're not a... See, now I like kebabs. I hate it when I have regular kebabs. If I go to a restaurant and they take it off the kebab, I want to take it off the kebab myself. See, now that's what separates us, Tom. You like to have yours in a bowl. I like to have mine on the kebab.
Yeah.
And that's what makes horse racing.
Okay. Well, I imagine that there's a way our listeners can get this.
That's right. And your imagination, if it takes you to the web and you go to zorbapasture.org, you will find this recipe. You will find our archived recipes and many of our other recipes. That's zorbapasture.org. And you can also find us on Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
How can we help you?
I have some pockets in my gum line, no abscesses or anything, and the dentist has recommended that I look into periodontal therapies and surgery possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer holistic approaches, and am hoping that if you might have some ideas on mouthwashes and other things, or like even including increasing magnesium and calcium in my diet, how to do that.
Uh-huh. You know, it's very, very interesting. One of the issues that we happens with our teeth as we get older is periodontal disease. Mm-hmm. You know, the tooth is okay, but there are bacteria that live around the tooth, and they hide underneath the plaque. They hide between little pieces of food that are between our teeth. Mm-hmm. And the first things that periodontists often do is they may do a deep cleaning to basically clean out your teeth. Nothing chemical. Let's go in and let's make sure we get all of the plaque down out to the root of the tooth, which can be very uncomfortable, very, very unpleasant. It's called root planing. I think that's the name of it. And often you clean things out and you start flossing, and you start doing things essentially with your teeth, brushing twice a day with an electric toothbrush for 2 minutes. That can make a big difference. I don't know of any you can use a mouthwash. And a number of years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, Pfizer was told to cease and desist because they were advertising that Listerine mouthwash for 30 seconds or 1 minute was as good as flossing. And the American Dental Society brought a suit against that, and the FDA said, you have to cease and desist doing that. So they no longer say that using a mouthwash is as good, and the reason is using a mouthwash is not as good. Yeah. Now, are you flossing every day, once a day, twice a day?
Twice a day, I do the water pick.
Good, good.
And then I do a dry brushing, followed with one with toothpaste, and then I do a Listerine gargle.
Okay, well, you're doing as much as you possibly can. You're doing good stuff.
And I do floss in there, too.
And you do floss. So, I mean, you're spending a good half an hour a day almost with your teeth. But you're
Twice a day.
You're spending enough time with your teeth. I think if they're not any better, I would go to the periodontist and say, what are you going to do, and then where's the data for that? And generally, it's related to the size of the pockets. If you've got a pocket that's 7 or 8 millimeters, those are significant pockets that can eventually lead to tooth loss, and that's, of course, what you... You don't have any that deep. So, but you may, I think it's important. There's nothing that I can see that I know that can add to that. There was data on vitamin C. It washed out because vitamin C, although scurvy people have gum disease, vitamin C has not been shown to prevent gum disease. I think a good multivitamin is important. I think vitamin D, 100 to 2,000 milligrams or international units of vitamin D, I think is useful. You could try vitamin C, although the data is pretty skimpy on that. But if you're going to try vitamin C, I would do a chewable vitamin C, 500 milligrams, 3 or 4 times a day. See what that does.
And what about magnesium and calcium?
I don't think they do anything for it at all.
Well,
good luck. Floss away.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Zorba, before the break, it's time for a cheesy edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Not long ago, we were discussing feta cheese during our recipe segment. You mentioned that feta cheese is from goat's milk. Well, that statement lit our phone lines up and flooded our email. Monique from Madison sums it up well. She writes, your stuffed lamb burgers sound delicious, and I will try them. However, I just wanted to clarify one thing that you said regarding feta cheese. It does not have to be goat's milk, though it often is. In Greece, from where it originated, it is mostly sheep milk with some goat milk. It is sometimes made from cow's milk also, though for me, it doesn't have the right texture.
You know, it's interesting. I thought that feta always came from goat's milk. And one of the things I love about this show is that we have listeners who are educated public radio listeners. And as soon as anyone makes a mistake, they are right there with their emails ready to tell us the truth. And I stand corrected. It may be made with goat's milk. And, you know, it's interesting because when I was in California visiting my cousin, I went and got sheep's milk feta. Oh. And so I thought it was a special feta made from sheep milk, and in reality, it's just a variation of feta cheese. So, I stand corrected. It may be from sheep, it may be from goats, it may be from cows, but it's always delicious.
We think of this as a learning experience for the listeners.
That's right.
But it's also a learning experience the other way,
I guess.
But as long as we've been doing the show, surprised I'm not smarter than I am. If it's supposed to be a learning.
Right. We should be gaining intelligence, but that's the problem.
If Zorba's advice gets your goat, let us know during our next edition of Disagreeing with the doc. Just send your rebuttal to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org, and don't be sheepish about it.
Oh, very good. Don't forget, more of your calls are coming up. We have our medical myth buster, some interesting research to talk over too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have listeners waiting, but still an open line for you at 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, we have some research to talk over, this time having to do with eating disorders.
Right. You know, the most common eating disorder that we look at is childhood obesity, teenage obesity. And we talk about it all the time because it's doubled in the last 20 years. It's a big issue. It leads to diabetes as an adult and heart disease and so on. Mm-hmm. And what happens is we've forgotten the other end of the spectrum, yeah, which is anorexia, nervosa, and bulimia. Yeah. And these things are not rare. They're there. And recent research shows that they're actually becoming more and more common, and they're a big issue. If we look at eating disorders, you know, of anorexia and bulimia, they affect somewhere probably about 1.5 to 2% of the teenage population, which means that they're not rare. If we look at anorexia, the death rate from anorexia, the death rate is about 5%, between 5 and 10%. That is a huge death rate. And quite often that death rate that's associated with anorexia is from suicide. In other words, it leads to suicide. Yeah. So these are social disorders. This is a physiological disorder. And the problem is it's not recognized. You know, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah. Well, some extreme cases, of course, are obvious, but not all cases.
No, not at all. And what happens is society reinforces that you shouldn't be obese, which is true. And then if somebody is thin, they'll say, oh, you know, especially with young girls, you've got the look of a model. You're thin and, you know, I'm glad you're watching your weight. And they look at models, and models are basically that model clothing are basically anorexic. They might not have anorexia, but they're anorexic. They're as thin as they can possibly be. That's what women models generally are. And so young girls who apply to that, who have the disease, the psychological disease of anorexia, it's not noticed by the parents.
Yeah.
You know, they often say, well, you're watching your weight. That's good. You're thin. That's exactly what you should be. And it's a big issue.
What's startling to me is the researchers, when they looked at this, found the median age of these disorders, anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, 12.
12.
The median
age.
That's right.
It was a young age. They're markedly younger and younger and younger. The age used to be about 14 to 16. So in other words, they were sophomore in high school. They often lost weight that was recognized. But these are 12-year-olds. So these are kids that are often in middle school or in junior high school. And what happens is they begin to withdraw from normal activities, social relationships, family relationships. They become unable to carry on normal activities. And so what I think is important here is for physicians to recognize these eating disorders exist, for parents to recognize these eating disorders exist. And if you have a teenager who you think is too thin, ask your doctor and get help.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I am having something very strange happening to me. I have been trying to lose some weight, get back in shape, and I'm a little flabby around the middle, so mm-hmm. I've been working on doing some core exercises. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing core exercises at home, it's not a great big deal, because I confess I don't probably push myself very hard at home, mm-hmm. and I stop when I don't feel good. But when I'm taking an actual core class, say at the YMCA, and they're pushing us to keep a tempo and move it right along, mm-hmm. by the time the class is over, I am having severe, nauseating headaches. Like I'm being stabbed in the middle of my forehead with a spike.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like cluster headaches right in the front of my forehead. And they take an ever-increasing amount of time to go away. They seem to be getting worse instead of better, even though I'm working out more and more. And I am not exactly sure which direction to head to try to deal with them. I've been told drink more water or breathe better.
I was just going to say, are you hydrating well?
I drink 3 to 4 liters a day.
How hard are these exercises you're doing?
I don't know. I guess I don't really know how to answer that question. A lot of them use exercise balls or Bozos, but they're Bosus, I guess they're called. I call them Bozos because they hurt.
They're Bosus. They're not Bozos.
There's nothing good about any of these classes. They're very sweet. But they're typically not very long-lasting. I mean, they're 15 minutes at an end of an aerobic class, or there's actually a 30-minute class, but they do plenty of pauses and stretches and repositioning. You're working on both ab and back muscles. If I'm just doing a couple of reps of, let's say, 13.
Yeah.
So I do 13 reps, and then I change to an exercise that'll work my back a little more, and I do 13 of those, and then I stand up, and then I'm a 30-minute class.
Uh-huh. Are you holding your breath when you're doing the core?
I really worked hard on trying to breathe and focus on that in hopes that it would make it better. But I don't know. There comes a point when I can't pay attention anymore.
Sure.
I'm just trying to get through it.
Well,
so maybe
If you're having, let's look at this kind of broadly. Number one, headaches often, a lot of things that cause headaches are dehydration, a lack of glucose in the bloodstream at the right time when you want to have blood sugar in the bloodstream, and lack of oxygen. So one of the things you want to concentrate on, and you want to see whether or not there's a time issue. You said you didn't notice a time issue, but I want you to go and try to do 1 minute of core exercise and see whether or not that does it. And then do 5 minutes of core exercise and see if that does it. And then do 10 minutes of core exercise. I think that's a critical issue. In other words, monitor yourself starting at 1 minute, then go to 5, then go to 10. See whether that's the issue. Second issue is, instead of doing the core all at one time, you do the core within a particular sequence of how you're doing the exercises. So you do one core, one upper body, one lower body, one core, one upper body, one lower body. In other words, so the intensity of the core is spread out over a longer period of time. It sounds to me like what you're doing is you're actually triggering a migraine headache. I mean, that's what's going on. And so you've got to look at hydration, oxygen, and the way you're doing it to see what it is. And nobody wants to have a headache at the end of exercise because they're not going to exercise.
Yeah,
they're not going to exercise. And this sounds to me like this may be in the same realm. There's something in the exercise you're doing or not doing that's actually producing it. And a little bit of observation, as I said, holding the breath, putting some variation into the exercise, and then making sure you're hydrated, will look for it. And if that fails, I would take an anti-inflammatory and see if that stops this from happening.
So take an NSAID about 15, 30 minutes before I work out.
Even an hour or two hours before. As long as it's in your system, see if an NSAID will make a difference. Double the dose on the bottle of the over-the-counter ibuprofen or naproxen. Double the dose.
Yeah.
Do not take the dose that's there. See what it is. Call us up and let us know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for
appreciate your time.
Yep.
Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, it's time now for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Wayne in Wausau, Wisconsin, that deals with bacon. Wayne writes, "Dear Zorba, a recent recipe you shared contained turkey bacon. You said it was a healthier substitute for regular bacon. However, turkey bacon is incredibly high in sodium content, and I was told that it's better to eat regular bacon in moderation than it is to eat turkey bacon. So what's the deal? Is it better to get rid of a lot more sodium or a little more fat?"
Well, the deal is that bacon, by any other name, is bacon, and it is not a healthy food. So let's put that to the side.
Okay.
There is no such thing as a healthy strip of bacon. Why? Because most of the flavor of bacon comes from fat. Mm-hmm. We eat too much fat in America. It tends to be saturated fat because it's animal fat. And so now the question is one healthier than the other?
There's no tofu bacon?
You know something? I bet there is tofu bacon. I bet you there is tofu bacon. I have never had it. And you know something?
You never want it.
I probably never want it. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. When I want my bacon, I want my bacon. Yeah. I'm not going to have tofu bacon.
Okay.
But when we look, there's sort of a trade-off. There is a lot of sodium in regular bacon. And that's why when you look in the grocery store, it'll say low-salt bacon, which I've tasted, which does not really taste very good. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of salt in regular bacon. And there tends to be more salt in turkey bacon because I've looked at them and there tends to be more salt in there. Turkey bacon tends to be a little bit lower in fat than regular bacon. Tends to be a little bit lower in calories. Difference is maybe 20 calories a slice. That's not a lot. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot. But if you're having a lot of bacon or if you're having bacon every day, which you shouldn't have, The turkey bacon is a little bit better. They have a surprising amount of protein. There's a fair amount of protein. It's about maybe 4 to 5 grams of protein in bacon. So actually, it's a high-protein food, but it has, you know, it's a cured meat, which makes it really not very good at all. So I think the bottom line is regular bacon has more fat. Turkey bacon tends to have more sodium. Neither bacon is healthy. Choose your poison.
So not every day.
Well, yeah. Well, my dad had bacon and eggs every day and lived until 89. Okay. And he used to say, well, I live until 89. I had bacon and eggs every day. The reality is, yeah, but half the people you were friends with who had bacon and eggs every day are dead because they have heart disease. But, yeah, moderation on a Saturday, not on a Sunday. But, you know, if you look at bacon, it's ubiquitous now in burgers all over the place.
That's true.
I mean, you know, it's bacon burgers, and that's where we're consuming more than half of our bacon. It's not just for breakfast anymore.
Have a myth or turkey myth you'd like to bust? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413 toll free. And a caller now, Zorba in Crossville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
You know, I had a little bout with the flu a couple of weeks ago and came through that alive. Which at times I thought I wouldn't.
Yeah, congratulations.
Right.
Oh, boy, and the congratulations are in order for that.
Yeah.
But I noticed afterwards, and continuing, the skin under my eyes and my eyelids took on a whole different feel and look for the first time. And God forbid I look old. And I am old. But it took on a leathery... almost alligatory, for lack of better words, and the love of my life, she noticed it, and, you know, all I've got's my looks, fellas.
I got it.
And, you know, we put lotion on it, and I even put Neosporin on it.
Uh-huh.
But, it was noticeably different, and I didn't know if it was something that, you know, the flu helped cause, or... You know, the lack of sleeping or the quality of sleep during the flu or what it was, and
well,
it's still there.
It's a variety of things lead to this phenomena. There are a few things that lead to it. First of all, dehydration. That's number one, number two, and number three. So from the inside point of view, when we're sick, when we've got the stomach flu or the flu, we don't drink enough, we become dehydrated. And what happens is, as our skin ages, it becomes looser. It doesn't really become looser, but it really does. Elastin, which is actually part of the skin, it's, if you will, it's sort of the wires in our skin that are taut, becomes weaker. And it becomes smaller as we become thinner. There's less elastin. And so what happens is, whereas a child may be dehydrated, we won't notice as much and we pinch it. If you pinch your skin, when you're older, which like Tom is doing at this particular moment, you know, it doesn't come back right away. It stays kind of pinched out. See that, Tom? Yeah,
sure.
Tom is doing it. So hydration, number one issue. And that's hard to do when you're sick, but when you're not sick and you're done with it, you want to rehydrate yourself. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're drinking enough until your urine is a clear color, you know, so it's not a dark color, which means you're dehydrated. And you want to do that. And after 24 or 48 hours, that part is taken care of. The other part can be actually sort of the moisture on the top of the skin. And sometimes when we're sick, if we're in a room with a humidifier, not a dehumidifier, but a humidifier, ultrasonic or cold air moisture humidifier, the outside of the skin will actually perk up a little bit. It's kind of an interesting phenomena. So being in a room which is properly humidified will cause your skin to perk up. And then the final thing, if it really bothers you, over-the-counter, 0.5% hydrocortisone cream can do a lot to kind of rehab some of those dark wrinkles under the eyes. And that'll take a couple of weeks. Neosporin, I don't think that's going to do anything. But sometimes over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream, use it 3 times a day for the next week or 10 days. And that should do it. That should perk up your skin really, really nicely so you'll be back to your handsome self.
Thank you for noticing, and I'll pass this on, and we enjoy your show. It makes our weekend.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Before we clock out for the week, Zorba, you should don your powdered wig for another case of Judge Zorba. Do you think we could spin this segment off into a daytime TV show?
If I got the wig.
Today's case.
The wig makes the
show.
That'll
do it. Today's case comes to us from Alec in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, who has a long-running debate with a friend about overeating. Alec writes, "Hello. There's a long-running debate on a statement a friend of mine made once. He suggests if you're going to overeat, all you can eat, buffet or such, then you should go overboard for the whole day or at least as much as you can stand at that meal. His logic was that your body cannot process all of the calories, so what remains will exist as waste."
I can't. That's not the way the human body works. Doesn't say, okay, I'm going to process 2,500 calories and the rest of it I'm not going to process it all. I shut off. If that were the case, no one would be overweight in our society. We would just get to a normal weight. That is a myth. If you just start overeating and you eat for the entire day and just eat as much as you can, you will become fat. It is a myth that you will actually stop processing that food. That's the problem. Everyone thinks that food isn't processed. How about not eating after 5 o'clock in the evening because, you know, it's not processed? No, it's a myth.
Nice try anyway, Alec.
Yeah, nice try. Nice try. If you overeat, you overeat.
Settle your lifestyle debates with help from Judge Zorba. Add your case to the docket by sending your affidavit or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Adam Archer Friedrich, who gets a lot of help from his loyal technical director, Brad Woodhouse Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0324Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.